Working Cows Podcast, Episode 91.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, here with another episode for you guys, powered by the Global Ag Network. And today I have Bart Davidson on the show. He is from Maya Grazing. He's one of the co-founders of Maya Grazing and spent a lot of time in his career as a grazer and as now as a consultant and a software developer and all of those things. And wanted to sit down and chat with him about how Maya Grazing is helping ranchers manage data and turn that data into actionable, decisionable information. So, Bart, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Well, Clay, it's a pleasure to be here. I really do enjoy this.
You are representing Maya Grazing today, and I really appreciate you guys reaching out and having the opportunity to sit down with you and talk. And I have seen and recently been looking at the different progress between the crop side and the production in the cropping side and how they have been adopting technology, and then also seeing the lag behind in the adoption of technology from the cow-calf production side. Could you talk a little bit about why you think that lag exists?
Sure, Clay. Yeah, look, I think it's cultural. I think that it's changing over time. However, I recall an old colleague of mine telling me that the best ideas in the world in grazing are still probably going to take 50 years to flow through from the day of innovation to the day that it's the mainstream practice. Now, that was 20 years ago, but it may well improve and shorten up in timeframes. But I think there's definitely a lag. There's no two ways about that. Now, why is that? There's all sorts of reasons I'd imagine. First that comes to mind is that there's a whole lot more money tied up in cropping. It's not hard to have $1 million, $2 million, $5 million worth of depreciating steel out in the shed on your average cropping property these days, which means that there's a lot of money on the table, which means that anything that might accentuate the gap in the margin or lift productivity, even if it's in the 1, 2, 3%, is worth doing. And the reality is that the grazing or ranching or growing and consuming grass can be a lot simpler, right? We can have a horse, a hat, a pair of boots, and a few fences, and away we go. So there's probably that same, there's the lack of that fundamental pressure to adopt change quickly. And in my own experience, and I guess it's just me, but, you know, I spent a fair bit of time in all sorts of intensive cropping systems in Australia, and it's certainly the case that from a new technology coming online to adoption as being the mainstream practice, it can be a season or two. If it's good stuff, it just goes because there's a lot of money on the table. And it's the case that people don't have a mental adjustment to make there. I mean, I have a wheat field, I have a cotton field, a corn field, I get my yield. I know the things that I did to achieve that yield. I get paid for that yield, you know, bushels per acre or tons per acre of crop. You know, it's pretty easy to make the links that say, well, I did this and this and this. My yield was this. My income is that. There's a straight line. Everything lines up. Now, you think about grazing, and it's just nowhere near as straight as that. We've got a moving feast of things that want to change every time you turn around and have different attributes and categorizations and values that mean really the best graziers for that reason are instinctively, intuitively, I would say artists. You know, they're good at what they do because they carry these things around in their head and they do a really good job of it. That's my short take on it.
How do you think that Maya Grazing can close the gap between the great intuitive grazers and people who are just trying to figure out how to maximize the carrying capacity of their land?
Yeah, great question. Well, you know, grazing is good. Grazing management is the balance of, or the dance, if you like, of science and art. And when you spend time with graziers, you know, I've been one. I obviously wasn't a good enough one because now I'm in software, and I'm a consultant too. But Lord help me not to be a politician. But the reality is, I think that that's a constant challenge, and that if I was to be honest and just look at my experience and exposure to the grazing industry, whether it be in the States, Canada, or Australia or New Zealand, I think it's the case that there's a very small subset. You know, maybe it's 3-5% who are instinctively just fantastical observers of nature, the rhythms and the patterns and the nuanced way of looking at how we respond to the ecology of the animal, the groups of animals, the pasture, the forage, the season, and all of those lovely things. Having said that, the reality is that the other 95% just don't necessarily have that, and they need tools. What are the tools that they need? Well, I think ultimately it's a feedback loop. And so that, to answer your question, is I think where Myer steps in to build those feedback loops with a purpose. And we've got to be really clear on what the purpose is here, because there's too much stuff in the world. There's too many distractions and opportunities to lose time to do anything, let alone software for bloody grazing. And the reality is that the problem, most people don't know what the problem that we're solving here is. Everyone's fine. It's the weather that's the problem. It's the season that's the problem. It's the markets that's the problem. It's the new tariffs that are the problem. When really, and I am going to answer your question here, that really the problem, as we see it, is that your average rancher can't make really good decisions on time as they need to, in a way that benefits them most at the time of making that decision. And the things I'm talking about making decisions about are investing money, increasing stocking rate, decreasing stocking rate, comparing production systems, comparing enterprises, cow-calf versus stockers versus trading versus whatever. Strategic decisions about how we're running this business and how we're going about consuming grass and turning it into beef, wool, milk, whatever. That's where we're at. We're solving the problem of making better decisions in a timely fashion, rather than, as is so often the case, seeing it on the news when we're in deep drought or in a really particularly good season and we haven't had the confidence to make decisions that are worth a lot of money ultimately. Now, that was meant to be my short answer, but there's a longer answer to it too.
What's the specific way that Myer helps people make those decisions with confidence?
Sure. Well, look, Myer grazing is really it's a digitized grazing chart, which then flows off into various aspects, and you know we're constantly building it out. But at its core, it is about production. It is about who is grazing what, when, and where. You know, which animals have got which forage in which pastures for how long. And just letting that all flow through, because there's a bunch of data just there. Now, you then take that data and say, well, okay, there's a lot of data points there, and plenty of folks can do that in their head. More can't. Let's take that data, which is about production, which is about yield of forage per pasture, et cetera, and then, which is where we started the conversation about croppers versus grazing. So now, you know, in that first instance, we've got some data about grazing yield, which isn't so hard if we know who's grazing what and when and for how long, to then very quickly and easily calculate forage yield per period of time, per year, per pasture type, per land type, per inch of rain, in all sorts of different ways and metrics that are really just good, clean, simple numbers that tell us, you know, production is going well or production is going poorly. But again, that's really just a springboard then to actually getting some value, because those numbers don't allow us to necessarily do much on their own. So that's number one. Which is really where Myer grazing started, digitising a graze chart and doing the calculations that we might do in our head, but we probably won't. Or we might do in an Excel spreadsheet, but after the paddock or the pasture names have changed a couple of times and we've subdivided and we've done some temporary fencing, or we've drafted off a few herds a few different ways, all of a sudden the XL just won't work. Whereas, you know, a more relational database like we've built can handle that pretty easily. And then we're in a position where we're crunching some numbers across time and space. By that I mean, you know, through a rolling period of time across the ranch, which may or may not be categorized to land type and pasture type and forage type and so on. And this means that those numbers can then pop out some bigger picture, meant we being the rancher, that well, we need to make some better decisions here. We need to plan out who's going to get what. And what I mean by who's going to get what, I mean, you know, which herds are going to get which forage based on quality and quantity and holistic management, who gets what, and making sure that that's got some logic behind it rather than being ad hoc and catching up. So we've built in a very strategic way of doing that that follows those principles, and it was built for that purpose. And then thirdly, you know, really this is where I think we started off, because this is a real problem that we needed to solve, and that is building a feedback loop in there that says, okay, how are we going? What's our position? So we started with production, we moved into planning, but then the end game is position. Where are we? What's the vibe of the farm? What's the vibe of the ranch? What's the vibe of how this thing is going? Because just having a bunch of data is just keeping us busy. That's not the solution here. The real need is to be able to make better decisions about where we are, how we employ our capital, how we employ our labour, and fundamentally, you know, basically making sure that we don't have too much or too little grass, and getting that balance right, because that tends to be where the greatest amount of opportunity cost is in most ranches, is our conclusion and experience. And that's really why my grazing was born, to be honest. That's where it all began.
Can you give me some examples of how and where Maya grazing is being used? And what I hear you saying is that it's a tool that helps people to adapt to the changes that are going to happen in herd and forage availability and all the other things that can, all the other variables that they will encounter in their ranch business. So can you talk about some examples where Maya grazing is helping people make those decisions?
Sure. And look, whether it's, you know, cow-calf pairs, trade enterprises, camels, sheep, goats, it really doesn't matter. We certainly began the business and the application with the eye very clearly on cattle production, but we've been drawn off into a whole bunch of different realms. So, and it's pretty broad in terms of the type of enterprise. So, you know, our foundational property or ranch was a very sort of intensive, or is a very intensive, high production trading enterprise, where, you know, it might go from a few hundred to 5,000 or 6,000 head in a single year, and needing and really that was the seed or the genesis, if you like, for the software that has evolved, because we on that property and that group of that management group needed to have some visibility of the risk. It's a grass-fed operation, high turnover, grass-fed finishing, meaning that there's no feedlot to pick up the pieces if we can't finish the animal, we being the rancher, the management, the advisor, and so on. And that really put the wood on visibility of data. So, okay, so there's a trade enterprise that – a grass-fed trade enterprise with a bunch of well-bred cattle that needed to be managed in such a way that everybody on the team could work out what the stocking rate needed to be in advance and have confidence that enough finished animals were going to be getting on the bus to slaughter each month. That's really where it began. And so we began with that whole de-risking that kind of an enterprise approach. And because really at the end of the day, you know, it didn't matter whether it was that enterprise in a really good, high production, high performance, high quality soil environment with a above average rainfall, we still found as a management team that we couldn't predict what was going to happen with the weather. We couldn't really say that most years were normal or average, and the fact is they weren't. And So we had to find a way to get around that. And so obviously grazing charts and holistic management came into the equation. We still found that we weren't getting across the data in a good enough way between all of the various stakeholders. And so, you know, we had the information, we had the data, but the decision-making still fell over. And so that's why we went down the path that we did and built something that brings all of that together into a single place that's live 24/7 that we can all be looking at. And then to go back to your question, well, okay, there's breeding enterprises that supply that grass-fed finishing operation, for argument's sake, that are totally removed. Half the annual rainfall, a fraction of the soil fertility, you know, a few thousand mama cows running around, and nowhere near the liquidity of stock turnover as is so common amongst the breeding enterprises. And that would be our largest sector now. So we have businesses in the north of Australia that actually literally run 50,000 cows per property back to small places that, you know, smaller dairy, smaller beef jobs that might be under 100 cows and everything in between. You know, in Australia, we have some pretty big scale. At times, we have farms that are up to 250, 300,000 acres and running anywhere from sort of 15 to 30 inches of rain per year. So we're across all of those various types of enterprises now. We're some 40,000 hours into this thing, so we've kind of been exposed. We've worked our way through the early stages, and we're still building, but we've kind of been exposed to a whole bunch of different types of production systems and been forced to work out how to do that, because all of those businesses fundamentally have the same problem, and that is, how does the management team, whether it's a single operator, owner manager, or a corporate entity that has multiple tiers of management, how do they make decisions on time about what they need to be doing so that they're de-risking how they do what they do, which ultimately comes back to the biggest asset on the farm apart from the land, and that is the stock inventory and what we're running relative to the season that we've actually had and expect to have, because that's where the gains and losses tend to be made.
Can you talk about the influences of the team as far as the people that have influenced the team at Maya Grazing that have brought them to how they think about how best to help the ranch manager maximize profit?
Yeah, sure. Look, it all began with three dudes with cowboy hats, myself included, walking into an office in North Sydney CBD, downtown Sydney, and finding a business that was in software and that was kind of capable of talking the lingo, which we could understand with agriculture, because we've actually learned that, you know, most development teams, software application teams, are pretty good at building stuff for the government or for telcos, banks, you know, those kind of institutions. That's really where most of the dev in the world goes. Although more recently we've got a lot of startups doing all sorts of stuff, obviously, but we found that agriculture is a unique beast. And so we were fortunate enough to find a team of a development team that was essentially built around the technology of understanding constant change in relationships. They'd actually built software specifically to do with births, deaths and marriages and, you know, essentially population counts in Australia and then actually internationally. So they had a very good grasp of the fact that relationships change, and we needed an architecture that could understand that. So we said, right, let's jump in with these guys, and then subsequently that business has merged in with us. So we had some cowboys, if you like, that walked into that office and said, this is what we want to do, and we're now almost 4 years later, and we've got our own business, and it's evolved quite a long way. We've got a development team, but essentially the influences on that have come from the farm. So we've got a very close feedback loop between ourselves and the various types of farms. We've got a very good support team that basically, well, not basically, they entirely come from the farm. They work from the farms in various states of Australia and now in the US as well. And they understand exactly and intrinsically how these things work, because they've got their own mama cows to move around after work or before work or during work, and they understand the principles of planned grazing because they're doing it, and they understand the principles of how difficult it is to juggle money, people, grass, water, feed, hay. So they're very strong influences for us, and we make sure that we stay pretty rooted and round and grounded in that, because that's our DNA. So having said that, we're in a tech world, and so our team has to be able to, you know, show agility and work across different types of tech, which is changing all the time. It's changed quite significantly since we even had this idea in the first place. So it's a constantly changing world, and we're definitely very proud of a dev team, the development team, the geeks in the computers is what I mean there, that are constantly being challenged to stay current in a very rapidly changing space. So for me, it's a really good microcosm of the farm. You know, farms are being forced to deal with new technologies, and I guess we are an embodiment of that in some ways.
Bart, just a quick break. It is the last year of the High Plains Ranch Practicum, your last opportunity to get in on it, to go and hear from guests, perennial guests of the Working Cows podcast, like Aaron Berger and Dallas Mount and Derek Schwanebeck. Trey Patterson has been a guest on the Working Cows podcast. You can find his episode at workingcows.net/11. Future guests, people that I would love to get on, but one of the best ranch managers in the nation, according to Burke Tigert, Jim Sewell, will be there. So I would encourage you to take the time, make the effort to get there. Registration is open now. The first class is starting towards the end of June, and really, really encourage you to get there. It's a great opportunity to sit in a room full of other ranchers and have your paradigms challenged and challenge each other's paradigms and ask questions and work through difficulties in your ranch businesses and figure out how to better maximize the profitability and the joy that your family receives from these ranch businesses. Go ahead and register at hpranchpracticum.com. Bart, just a quick break. It is the last year of the High Plains Ranch Practicum, your last opportunity to get in on it, to go and hear from guests, perennial guests of the Working Cows podcast, like Aaron Berger and Dallas Mount and Derek Schwanebeck. Trey Patterson has been a guest on the Working Cows podcast. You can find his episode at workingcows.net/11. Future guests, people that I would love to get on, but one of the best ranch managers in the nation, according to Burke Tigert, Jim Sewell, will be there. So I would encourage you to take the time, make the effort to get there. Registration is open now. The first class is starting towards the end of June, and really, really encourage you to get there. It's a great opportunity to sit in a room full of other ranchers and have your paradigms challenged and challenge each other's paradigms and ask questions and work through difficulties in your ranch businesses and figure out how to better maximize the profitability and the joy that your family receives from these ranch businesses. Go ahead and register at hpranchpracticum.com. Bart, you sent me a lengthy email. Very good stuff throughout the whole thing. But at one point, you talk about the fact that 60% of the profit is from 20% of the years, and that most ranches are spending 20 to 30% of their time at average. And just a few episodes ago, Brian Alexander said that normal is just a setting on a dryer. So, we are not expecting average years, even though we talk about average as though it was something that we would get 7 out of 10 years, when it's probably more like 3 out of 10.
Sure.
Or less than that. And so can you talk about how Maya is helping people to maximize those good years, or those above average years, and then survive those below average years?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it makes me recall a conversation with that mad bad fellow, Kit Farrow, who was over speaking at actually that property I just mentioned before a month or two ago. And Kit said, you know, if people were average, they'd have one boob and one testicle. And I don't think I've laughed as hard for some time. Because it's true, you know, and only Kit could say that and get away with it, because we do have this mental model, and I'll just talk very briefly about the mental model. You know, when you're in the pickup down at the gas station, or you're at the fence talking to the neighbour, or you're at the rodeo talking about how things are going, as ranchers, we have this mental model about how things go, you know, how many cows we run, how many inches of rain we might typically get, or snow for that matter. And we have this kind of picture of how it tends to be. And the reality is that whether it's in the States, Canada, New Zealand or Australia, with some variations, the reality is that, yeah, we do. We spend somewhere between 10 and 30% of years close to or on that that long-term average. So it doesn't exist. It's the unicorn, as my old mate Dave McLean wrote yesterday in a blog. So really that's the challenge here is that we work in a business, i.e. ranching, where the culture is very much based on our intuitive understanding about how the farm works. Now, okay, if we have an average year, then it starts to rain at this time, it starts to warm up at that time, it starts to cool off at that time. We join the cows now, we wean the cows then, we sell some calves at this point, and so on and so on. And that's how this farm tends to run. And that mental model works really well, and we make money when the seasons are average, because that's kind of how we've built it. That's how we financed it. That's how our management team has kind of evolved to be. And as we've just noted, that rarely happens. It's actually a very small minority of years where that will happen. And so what happens? Well, typically people have got too much or too little grass. Now, in Australia, the reason for that, and I think it's the same in the States too, actually, if I look at the data, the reason for that is that we have a very dependable cycle of La Nina and El Nino, beautiful Spanish-sounding events that if we look back through the data, have been coming and going from our shores for a very long time. And the only thing that we don't know about them is their frequency or intensity. So we have to assume that will continue, and that will continue to have an effect on our seasonality, which means that it might rain late, it might rain early, it might warm up late, it might warm up early, which means that our mental model needs to be flexible. And that's where what we're talking about here with Meyer. So Meyer's way of dealing with that is to say, okay, let me check in against how things actually are. So that's where I mentioned before, we have this idea of production and then planning. But the really important one is position. What's our position? Give me some numbers that help me work out where I am now relative to the season that we've actually had. Not this long lost unicorn of a long-term average that we haven't had, but let me get a sense of the actual grass I've consumed or the forage I've consumed for the season that I've actually had. You know, if it was an early season and a bumper season, then I need to be able to see that relative to my mental model of long-term average, or if it's the other way. You know, if we've had 15 inches instead of 25 for the last 12 months, then I need to sort of contextualize that. I need to know how that translates, because in a very simple way, I would say that, okay, I might have run 20 acres per cow for the last 50 years on average, because I tend to forget the good years and the bad years, but just say I've been running 20 acres per cow. I always get my bilingual US conversions back to front. So typically on this ranch in my mind, I run 20 acres per cow. Now, if we drop 5 or 10 inches of rain because we've gone into one of those weather events that might be 6 months or, for that matter, 3 years, then what's going to happen? Well, I'm either going to need more acres per cow, or I'm going to need more feed in the form of hay, or I'm going to need to go and sell a few cows. But in reality, that's not what happens. In practice and experience, what we see firsthand and through the data is that people think this is going to change. People think, you know what, yeah, it's a bit dry at the moment. I talked to Bill down the road and, yeah, he agrees, but we're hoping, we're lucky, we're praying. You know, we'll get a break in the season, it'll come. But what tends to happen is that it delays further out, and we're in this sort of hoping stage of thinking things are going to turn around. But all the while, every day, you know, it's not quite 24/7, but as those girls need to, those cows are still going to keep on eating, and they're going to eat their 26 pounds per 1,000 pound of beast per day, whether we've got it or not, and whether or not we're still running at that comfortable level. And what will tend to happen is that they eat into future feed. It's really not that uncommon, in the hope that the season will turn around soon. So Meyer's job is to help that become clear and obvious, and to link up some pain points of the past to recognizing that, okay, we don't want to do that again. And so in advance, with plenty of time, we want to be thinking about, okay, well, maybe we do need to start thinking about more hay this year. Maybe we need to think about weaning early this year. Maybe we need to find some contract grazing this year in advance rather than when it's really plainly obvious and it's on the news, you know, because we've got a screaming drought and all of the terrible consequences that go with that, which we're seeing in Australia at the moment. So the role of software, as I see it, or we see it, is that we have all the data. Everyone's got the data, either in their heads or on a spreadsheet or on a grazing chart or somewhere. Maybe it's on the back of an envelope on the fridge, but it's turning that into something that means, you know what, I've got enough confidence right now that I'm going to go and sell a bunch of cull cows. I'm going to go and wean early, et cetera, all those things we just mentioned. And just as applicable would be on the other side when there's been a shift. You know, we've gone back to better times. I think we've all got to recognise that as humans, you know, we can't recognise 20% in the paddock biophysically. We can't recognise 20% difference in pasture. Above that, we can start to see it, which means that there's a bit of a gap. There's a bit of a lag time between our understanding of where the season's at intuitively and instinctively versus what the actual data would tell us. So the job of tools like Myer is to actually make those numbers easy to see. You know, it's on the phone or it's on the computer when I kick it in the gear. And I don't have to think too hard about it. I can see that the trend is actually going up, going down, and make some decisions on that, because the last time I didn't make those decisions as a rancher, guess what? It hurt me because I couldn't go and find more acres per cow. I couldn't go and find more feed at the same price. I actually had to pay 50% more because everyone else was doing the same thing. And it snowballs. And it's, as I said, it's on both sides. It's on the dry times and the good times. And we find that it's absolutely, it's like a paradigm shift. It's a whole game changer when I as a rancher can have the confidence to sit down with the rest of the team on our farm, whether that's just, you know, me and the wife or me and father or me and the whole management team from a group of farms, but to be able to say, look, it's not just my opinion about this, it's right there in the numbers. We've got to do something here. We've got maybe 60 days or 90 days to reassess how we're doing what we're doing so that we don't go down a hole and avoid that pain that we found last time when we didn't respond, whether it be to have the confidence to buy back into a market or to take on contract grazing because we've got excess grass and we know what that grass is worth, or on the other side, to find other ways to lighten the load on our own country and avoid this the real problem here and avoid the real damage that can occur when we overgraze. Again, we have oodles of data that can point at the real actual damage that overgrazing will cause, whether we're on the high plains of Montana or Western Plains of New South Wales. It's the same thing. It's overgrazing that plant relative to its ability to withstand it and the whole ecological flow-on effects of that. So it's a fairly fundamental thing that we're really passionate about is helping people get to that decision-making, because otherwise it's not enough.
Can you talk about the actual mechanics within Maya grazing of the data collection that will aid in giving Maya the information it needs to help us see a clear picture of what's actually going on our ranch in the paddocks and help us to make those decisions?
Yeah, sure. Look, it's the fact, I think, that the most valuable people on the farm are the guys and gals, the dudes with the big hats and the big belt buckles that are moving the stock around. The people that are moving the herds are the most valuable people. In Australia, we call them, you know, the bull runners, the people that go and check the water, most important people on the farm, because they see what's going on. They see those little nuances that the guy in the office may not see. So 80% of the data that resides in a rancher's data set in Myer grazing would be generated by people doing the moves, punching in some rainfall, punching in some moves, you know, moving herd from here to there, drafting out some animals, drafting in some animals, changing headcount, changing in animal units, etc. That's where the data comes from. And then that's the beauty of software. You know, we can then say, righto, well, let's go and crunch some numbers on that. Let's put some algorithms into that then goes towards those metrics that we were talking about earlier on, where we've got a reference point. And so the rancher doesn't actually have to think about those calculations, they just fall out the bottom. And really all the rancher's got to do is be conscious of, or have a mental link, if you like, to when things were good and when things were bad and remember how that felt, and then and relate that back to some numbers, because that's what metrics are about. You know, it's like the dipstick on the car. You pull the dipstick out on the car or the pickup, and you actually don't know what the depth of that thing is, or how many inches are in the bottom of the sump. You don't need to. What you need to know is whether the oil is between the upper and lower part of the graded bit there that matters. And if it's too dry, well, you're in a heap of trouble pretty shortly. Or if it's too high, then you might have overdone it. And it's much the same with our metrics. We've got a bunch of people that know them inside out, upside down, to the decimal point, because really all it is, most fundamentally, is following the conversion of moisture through snowmelt or precipitation overall into grass, into pounds per acre of grass, and knowing where over time, knowing where that should be. And so that's our role here. So to answer your question, it's really people just doing what they do. That's the beauty of it. That's the joy of it. Do what you do, which is move animals around and draft them in, draft them out, update this in terms of head count and their animal units. And then let the software do the tough stuff, which is rounding out some numbers every day that basically give you a reference point against where the season's at.
Can you talk to me about the meaning of failing fast and then the importance of learning of that or from that?
Yeah, look, it's I want to learn fast, and we as a business want to learn fail fast to learn fast. And I think it strikes me as something that we don't do nearly enough in agriculture, because we're always kind of just, we're sneaking past this bit and we're sneaking past that bit, and we just got through this bit and we just got through that bit. And what that actually allows us to do is not really learn. You know, I think culturally in agriculture, and certainly in grazing, we kind of strongly creatures of habit and always wistfully kind of thinking about how things used to be better and that great year of 56 and so on. And what we don't do really well is just put it all out there and say, you know what, I'm gonna try this. I'm gonna give this a go. And the best graziers that I get to spend time with fail fast. I've been learning from them. I've been watching them. And when I say fail fast, I mean, let's have a go at multi-species cropping. Let's have a go at pasture cropping. Let's have a go at temporary fencing. Let's have a go at massive stock densities to maximise animal count per acre for the shortest period of time. Maximise the density for the shortest period of time. And fail fast, right? Because we can't pretend to know what we're doing. We can't pretend to have it absolutely down pat. This is a pretty complicated dance between the environment that we're working in here, between the sun, the wind, the weather, the rain, the snow, the pasture, the species of forage. There's so many moving parts. We're never going to know it all. We can't. We have to be good observers, and that means we've got to be prepared to fail. We've got to be prepared to fail fast too, because if we spend 20 years, 30 years just slowly poking along and working out that, you know what, this isn't making us any money, we're getting old. I just became a grandfather. There's no time for that. You know, we have got to do what we can do within the ecological systems that we've got to make a difference, not just for ourselves, but for the people that take our land on when we go. So that's what I mean when I say that, because that's the joy of this whole thing. We've got the opportunity to turn an ecosystem around, i.e. the farm, the ranch, the valley, the collection of ranches, you know, and that's our opportunity, I think, in agriculture. Whereas a dude in the bank, you know, what's he got to look forward to? He can't do that. Hmm. We've got this really fantastic opportunity, and the only thing stopping us is our fear of failure at times.
Absolutely. Where is Maya Grazing headed? What's coming down the pike for you guys? What are you working on now? What are you hoping to challenge and change, and what are you guys looking forward to?
Look, there's always so much, Clay, you know. Life is a moving feast, and the real challenge is to be able to sit still long enough just to have the meal that's in front of us, but and enjoy it and be thankful for it. You know, for us, I think we recognise that we began with a product that was at the far end. You know, we built this for that 5%, and there's still things that we need to finish off for that 5%, and then work our way back to mainstream Joe that's in the pickup and still kind of working out what his inventory is, because he still needs to be able to get across this without understanding all of the nuances of of grazing management. And so our real reason for being now is to come back to the middle. You know, I don't know if we're at the left or the right in the politics of grazing management, but I feel like our role is to come back to the middle. And so we're very clearly doing that. And while we do that, look, we're pretty excited about a bunch of things. You know, the Internet of Things is here, and so we've got the opportunity now for a lot of the stuff that is manual to be starting to get collected automatically. And I mean, you know, for example, walk over weighing, so that we haven't got to wait 6 months for a muster to work out animal weights, or there might be gauges on soil moisture, water tank levels, on and on and on. You know, all sorts of things there that we're looking at to build out the data flow, if you like, because fundamentally humans, and certainly we in the ranching world, are lazy. We're not lazy necessarily, but maybe we're just efficient. You know, we put our time to good use, which means that we do less of the manual stuff if we physically can. So we're looking into that. We're doing a fair bit of work with groups, both in the States and Australia now, because we've found that it's been sought out. You know, group data and group work is actually a lot more effective than individuals one out trying to bash away at things at 9 o'clock at night. And this is a big learning in terms of really significant change in land management across bigger areas, both in the States and certainly in Australia. And on and on. Yeah, we've got too many opportunities, really. That's our challenge at the moment. But really and truly, it's to pick the bottom up. You know, that's really where our fundamental goal is to bring people along towards that journey that helps them become much better at the basics. You know, we call it brilliant at the basics, mastery of the simplicity, to be all over the things that mean they can make better decisions in their business, their grazing business.
So you're talking about trying to cut out the lows, basically, and maximize the highs?
Yeah, look, and that's right. I mean, you mentioned before there the 60% of profit coming from 20% of years. That's a fundamental theme for us, that it should actually be possible to make money in any season. And we know that because we know people that do, but they're in the minority. Why are they in the minority? Well, they haven't got tools that help them make decisions, at times ballsy decisions, about what they should be doing instead of blaming the weather. And that's what this is about. So, you know, there are opportunities even in poor times and poor seasons, just as there are in good seasons. So that's a real challenge here, and that comes back to having the data to make those decisions from and the process around that. So that's a big part of the deal. And I think we've also realised that, you know what, this isn't about cows, this isn't about pasture, this isn't about forage or the sun or the rainfall, much as we might like to think it is, and horses and big belts and big hats. It's actually about people. It's all about human learning. It's all about the interaction between us as people and our environment, and how we make decisions about who gets what and when. And I mean, you know, which herd gets what feed at what time. That's the bit that matters, and that's really been our challenge in software, is to bring that together, make that easier. Ever will it be so. That's our challenge, is to make that central to this, because it is people that make decisions. It's not it's not robots or machines, and that's our role here, to smooth that out, because there is such a big opportunity. There is, you know, how many, what percentage of the US and Australia, for that matter, is at the direct exposure of human decisions to do with grazing? It's enormous. So hence there's a huge responsibility and opportunity to change that.
So as a podcaster, or specifically a ranching podcaster, I think that we need more podcasts in this space, because I don't have time to interview everybody that needs to be interviewed, everybody that deserves to be given a platform. I couldn't possibly get around to interviewing all of them. I have a backlog of people who've requested, or guests who've been suggested. And so if anybody wants to start a podcast and wants access to that list, I'll give it to you. But what areas do you see as underserved in the ranching industry, or what tech company have you been dreaming about when in the minuscule amount of time that you have left, when you're not dedicated to Maya? What are some things that you've been thinking about, things that you wish people would start a tech company that would serve ranchers in this way?
Gee, that's a good question. You've got me stumped in the very short term. But I think, you know, the looming story here is about carbon and the massive opportunity that agriculture, and specifically good grazing management has to play in the carbon story. I think that's forming up. I think that there's masses of opportunity there, and that will change because, like it or not, politics or not, that market is going to emerge, and good grazing management is at the forefront of, or the tip of the spear, if you like, of capacity to be involved. So I think that's the first answer to that question off the top of my head, because there's a lot of upside there, and it's a fantastic opportunity and underserved at the moment. So we're certainly looking at that and thinking about ways of being involved there, because ultimately grazing management and data to do with grazing management is intrinsically linked, and that is an opportunity for someone like us and others to get involved with. And that'll evolve further. I mean, the idea of virtual fencing a couple of years ago, even 3 or 4 years ago, was just crazy. But you know what? There's 3 players in the world, and one of them has built on Myer grazing and will be commercialising this year. So we'll be seeing virtual fences in Australia and the US pretty shortly, and that's a game changer. And there'll be more. You know, it's a world of opportunity here. I think that tech has now reached grazing. It's not big and scary. It's actually here to help. Well, should be and can be and will be here to help us as managers of the land, custodians of the land, to do better and do more, because that's our responsibility. So there's a bunch of it. There's absolutely a bunch of it, you know, on the land stewardship side as well. There's just a bunch of opportunities. Again, we're working with Noble Institute in the States, and the outreach potential here is enormous.
A couple of things in response to that. First of all, carbon is good for the soil, and good soil soaks up carbon, and it's a self-feeding cycle there, that if we get our cows in the right place at the right time for the right reason, that they're going to do good things for the soil. And whether or not we think it's necessary, it's a good thing for it to happen. And if we could get a little bit of an extra check in our pocket for doing it, why not? And the second thing is, I hope my wife and I are transitioning out into some more wide open grass country, and I hope that virtual fencing thing comes online and is cheap enough before I have to build another fence. So we'll just say that.
Absolutely. But so, and on the carbon front, look, it's not black and white either. There is so many shades of grey there. You know, just for example, I've been looking at some data lately that, you know, we kind of assume that if we do this and we do that, then we're going to get carbon increases. But you know what? It's not that black and white. And this is the beautiful thing about the whole dance that we're talking about here. You've actually got to achieve certain levels of threshold animal impact or stock density to see carbon shift. So there's actually, there's real cause and effect stuff going on here. And I think that's the beauty of it. It's not just an assumed this is good and that's bad. That's the reality that we've got here. And that means we're going to need a whole lot more data and a whole lot more objective review of that to really learn. Because at the moment, you know what, there isn't a lot of data. And that's the power here. We've got to be looking forward to what we can do, and people need to be mindful of that now instead of thinking how to catch up in 10 years.
Well, you sent me 10 pages of notes, and we haven't made it through all of them, so we're going to have to do this again sometime. But I really appreciate your time, and I want to give you the opportunity to share with people, how they can get a hold of you individually, how they can get exposed to the Maya grazing technology and make sure that they're understanding that and make a decision about how they might partner with you in the future.
Thanks, Clay. Look, and the business is much bigger than me. I'm just one small part of it. But look, mayagrazing.com, simple as that. Go have a look. And we've certainly got plenty of fine people in the States now that we've been working with and loving the challenges of. So that's where you'll find me. And, we certainly look forward to talking to those people that want to have a go.
And that is mayagrazing.com, M-A-I-A, grazing.com. And your individual Twitter handle is @BartDavidson1. Is that right?
That's correct, Clay. Yeah, absolutely. I'm a newbie to the world of Twitter, and I'm a little bit pensive about it. It frightens me. But you know what? So far, so good.
If it frightens you, that means you understand it perfectly.
Well, look, I see it. It's an interesting beast. But yeah, I've enjoyed it so far.
Well, there'll be links to all that at the show notes page at workingcows.net/91. So check out workingcows.net/91 if you missed any of that, or if you want a link that you can click on to find any of that, I'll send you that direction. So Bart, thanks for your time today.
And thank you, Clay. I've really enjoyed it. I wish you will.
Well, I think we're officially going to break a record for most episodes in 1 week, and this will be that week, and I'm going to try real hard to get out my bonus episodes with R. Nelson Nash and L. Carlos Lara of the Nelson Nash Institute and the Infinite Banking Concept. We've talked about it with Mary Jo Ehrman before. This will be with the guy who founded that, who wrote the book, Becoming Your Own Banker, and then one of his close early disciples, and learning from him and developing that theory out and turning it into more than just life insurance, but really a strategy for seceding from the monetary system. We're going to talk about all of that with R. Nelson Nash and L. Carlos Lara. I hope to get those episodes out this week. So really looking forward to that. Really look forward to your response. I would encourage you to treat these like webinars that you're going to sit down for a minute, take some notes, have your paradigm challenged a little bit. And then I would also encourage you to stick around at the end of both of those episodes. R. Nelson Nash passed away after the episode was recorded, and I've got some things I'd like to share with you regarding that. And then at the end of the Carlos Lara episode, I would like to share with you just some thoughts about legacy and about challenging financial times and how we can figure out how to move through those successfully. So really encourage you to stick around for all of those episodes, to tune into them maybe in the evening at a desk with a notepad and take some notes and think about how you might be able to implement these strategies on your ranch business. So we will see you real soon with another episode of the Working Cows Podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.